Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
structure today. The common law defaults, although known majorly for traffic purposes, has many other. Truly, it's for most scenarios that you may find yourself in where there's no damage to property or person. It's just some entity is claiming you broke a rule, therefore you must pay a civil penalty. Both of these items are very affordably priced. The jurisdictions vary with a contribution of $250 and the common law default at $150. Also on the subject of your remedies in the law, most of you are probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage of yourremediesinthelaw.com, you are met with that blue box that pops up asking if you'd like to continue on to the site that you were visiting or stay and visit Americans Restoring America. The reason that we've done this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. There are multiple information providers talking about multiple subjects, as well as many other features and study groups at Your Remedy is in the Law. And Your Remedy is in the Law is just one of a couple dozen websites that all together make up Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit for you to see, and we hope that you'll do just that at your leisure. If you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that could give you their personal educated opinion about your particular situation, get a hold of us at yourremediesinthelaw.com, and we'll be happy to assist you in any way that we can. Statewide communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends and family about it. That's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict, pre-decided topics of discussion. Essentially, how it works is this. A wizard will walk you through a very easy setup. You know, put your name in here, click next. Put your zip code in here, click next, that sort of thing. Then it will walk you through the remainder of the setup. And then you get to a point where it will ask you what are your hot points interested in. This could range anything from credit card issues, home foreclosure, IRS matters, asset protection, or maybe veterans' rights, maybe personal health rights, anything that you can think of. If it affects your personal rights, you should find it in that list or something that's close enough. When the setup is complete, it puts it all together, much of how you think of a social network. Though nothing like a social network. It's very custom. It's very private. But it then puts you in contact with people in your local area that have similar interests to you. The idea here is to put the power of education and communication back in the hands of the common man. If you are in need of legal advice or you need someone to represent you, you're going to have to get an attorney. It's just that simple. But if there was a way, a private place that you could go to discuss matters, your personal opinions, their personal opinions, with people that were like-minded, maybe you jump online one day and you say, this happened to me today. First person comes back and says, well, I disagree with that. I don't think that they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, that's probably not going to be a tremendous amount of help to you. Maybe the next person comes on and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do were I similarly situated. I'd watch these YouTube videos, and then I'd go down there to my local county courthouse, go to the law library, get a law dictionary, and look up these terms. Maybe the next person after that says, those all sound like great ideas. I'd also go to this particular website and check out these educational materials that might assist you in your learning. And then for you to go and do some due diligence on what you're reading, just people's suggestions, people's opinions at all. But if you did some due diligence and educated yourself, maybe the farther you got into it, you discovered that it's not as difficult as you initially thought it would be because you're focused on one single subject. And you get to the point where you've educated yourself, and now you're handling your own affairs, your own matters. Well, folks, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's all we're trying to do here at Statewide Communications is just very simply get people to start talking again. Of course, there's no cost to you for using Statewide Communications, either signing up or the regular using of it. And so we hope that you'll pass that around. Freedoms Radio. If you're over the road, you don't want to deal with the call process, and you're just new to Your Remedies in the Law, and you don't yet have your username and password, therefore you can't see the phone number and the PIN. By the way, if you'd like to pick up a membership to Your Remedies in the Law, it's very easy. You just simply click the register button. Fill out your basic information there. You'll enjoy the first 30 days for free to evaluate it. After that, it converts to a very affordable $10 a a month on your credit card or your PayPal. But every single call is recorded. You have years of archives to go through, a vast wealth of knowledge, as well as many other wonderful features. But if that's not an option for you today, you have freedomsradio.com. Every night, the calls go out over the air at 9 p.m. Eastern live. There's also the question bar there where you can type in a question, click submit. As long as that's during call hours, that will pop up on the moderator screen, and we do our best to read every single one of those questions out over the air, as long as they are appropriate. So you'll get the one-on-one with the information provider like you would be by being a private member, but you do get your questions answered. And there's no cost to utilize Freedoms Radio, so no matter where you are or your circumstances, you never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, so winding down here, I'd like to go over one last bit of housekeeping. This is your caveat emptor, or your buyer beware. For any purchase that you may make, if your remedy is in the law or any of the other sites underneath the umbrella of America's Restoring America, when you come aboard and you go with an information provider, you are doing just that. The information provider is paying Mr. Edward for advertising at your remedy is in the law. This payment would be an expense to that information provider along with any other expenses that they might have associated with your particular product or service. When you contact us, all we simply do is listen to your particular scenario, quickly deduce from a list of folks that honestly most of you would probably never be able to find on your own just simply because they can't be found. Can we make those introductions? Not every part on the information provider is always going to be successful. Everybody always hopes for the best. We plan for the best, and believe you me, we aim for the best. But unavoidable things do sometimes happen, and when they do, you have to roll with them and deal with them as you would with anything else in life. But we also want to emphasize, though, that the intent is always to be successful. If you have any questions of that, we welcome you to visit www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com/testimonials. And see what others have to say about these products and services. Now, let's touch very quickly on the subject of refunds or the refund policy. There is none. Not if the remedy is in the law, anyway. Of course, when you come aboard and you go with a particular information provider, again, that is exactly what you're doing. So any discussion of a refund or a credit would be a strict and private matter between you and the information provider. And even then, that's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. You are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular process or information provider's time.
All right. Lastly, I want to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conference calls are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always keep it civil. Besides, if the question is posed properly and then answered properly, then we can all learn something from it. All right, well, that is my ramble for this evening, folks. So without further ado, it is my...
I was muted out. It's my pleasure to turn the call over to Brother John. Tonight we're going to be talking about the 16th Amendment. And John's got some zingers for you. So pay attention. John?
Good evening, Michael and Martin. Thank you very much for that very, very kind and gracious introduction. Tonight we're going to chat about the validity of the way and the way the 16th Amendment is handled. And the 16th Amendment, as we look at it right now, it says, and this was ratified by Congress in July 2nd of 1909, or it was passed by Congress and ratified in 1913, February 3rd of 1913. And it says, the Congress shall have the power to lay and collect taxes on income from whatever source derived, comma, without apportionment among the several states, comma, and without regard to any census or of enumeration. Now, before we get to the 16th Amendment, there's actually we have to back up a little bit. And we have to go to the Ninth Amendment. And it says, the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. And that's the Ninth Amendment. And I'll read that again. The enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. Okay? Meaning that regardless of what the Constitution may say, this is saying that you cannot have pre-existing rights. And it's indicating that there are pre-existing preeminent rights that are retained by the people. And it's saying that those cannot be denied or disparaged by the Constitution. So the question is raised is that in the Declaration of Independence, we come to the place where it's very, very clear that it says that we hold these truths to be self-evident, that men are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights. And among these are the rights to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, and that to ensure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. And when it says certain inalienable rights, among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. What happens is that as we read that, we realize that these three, life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, are three of a much larger pool, because it says among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. This is not the exclusive enumeration of those rights, and that to live one's life, to have liberty and pursue happiness, one also has to be able to earn an income and buy shoes for your children, food for your spouse, rent a house or buy property. By the way, property ownership is a right, not a privilege. The U.S. government is limited on how much property it can actually own. It can only own 10 square miles, and the District of Columbia, Washington, D.C., and that which is acquired for other forts and arsenals and other ports, etc. And under the current administration, it's not unforeseeable that this exact discussion may have taken place while 47 was 45 with 45. This exact discussion may have occurred with him, and that his comment was that he doesn't have the support of the people to finish draining the swamp, to do what needed to be done there. But as this occurs, it's quite possible that the U.S. government will be required to sell off its holdings. Presently, you find that a lot of the federal buildings now that U.S. government occupies are leased or rented from private sources. Now, the buildings have been, the properties have been sold, and the individuals have purchased it. This is to help get the U.S. government out of some of these, shall we say, get their tail out of the pencil sharpener on some of these issues about the wrongful possession of this property. That's one of the reasons why when some of the land purchases that were the U.S. acquired old New Mexico or old California and the Louisiana purchase and many of the other acquisitions there, and that they were they began to gift or give away land, and because they were not allowed to keep it, they were not allowed to hold it. They gave away the land, and it was they placed caveats on there because, you know, if you give something to someone, gifts are not always appreciated the same way something that you work for and earn and by the sweat of your brow that you make yours. And some people say, well, this is mine, you know, and I work for it and I earned it, and they've got a particular pride and discretion over it that they exercise that is very different than if it was given to them. And thus, homestead laws were created, and individuals were allowed to, if they homesteaded a piece of property, they could homestead a certain amount of acreage, depending on whether it was the Louisiana Purchase or California or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They were allowed to homestead different quantities of land, and they and if they improved it to the place where they proved that they were living on it, sometimes it, there were certain cases where they only had to prove up that they had built a residence on it. They didn't have to live on it very long. There's even one jurisdiction where it was 1 year, but some cases the you had to live on it 5 years, and there's even one where there was 10 years you had to live on that homestead. But in the meantime, nobody could lay claim to your property if you filed with the county clerk or that you were in the process of homesteading that property and that you had given the definition of the property in what you were homesteading. That was your property. Now, if owning property is a right and not a privilege, then can you legally tax the property to the point where if somebody fails to pay the taxes that you take away the property? And the government takes away the property, and the local jurisdictions are not constrained by the same definition that the U.S. government is constrained to, the 10 square miles, Washington, D.C., District of Columbia, Guam, Virginia, Puerto Rico, held possessions, and the arts and forts and arsenals, etc. They come in and seize the property, and they sell it to, quote-unquote, pay the taxes. Well, the issue becomes if property ownership is not a right, then they can legally tax it to the point where they can take it away from you, and they can take away your place to reside. Oh, wait a minute. You have the right to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. If you don't have a place to live, can you legitimately have life, liberty, and pursue happiness if you don't? There are there are certain states that presently are looking at the possibility of completely outlawing property tax. And some people would laugh and scoff, and the first state that they quote, which is the first two or three states that they'll quote, are New York, Massachusetts, California. And in California, although California many years ago made some avenues towards some relief on the property taxes through something called Proposition 13, and for those of you who don't know what that is, you can do a web search and just do California Proposition 13. That's all you have to do is just do on any search engine on the internet, and it'll come up. And individuals, right now, the only reason why some individuals are tolerating the unbelievable escalation of property values that's occurring in California, and remember, on the last three property value crashes, every single one of them started in California. And the property value crash that occurred in the jurisdiction that I'm currently living in can be traced back to properties becoming so high-priced in California that there began to be a surplus on the market, and individuals were abandoning them to the banks because they couldn't afford to make the payments on them. And now we see laws like an employee at a McDonald's flipping burgers or serving French fries. And this includes if Donald Trump was to work there, he would only make $10 an hour. But he would make $10 an hour. And $10 an hour is the high, presently one of the highest minimum wages in the country. And but and the state of California is already in the red on the ink because their taxation is just unbelievable, and they have a on the property. But the reason that some people still put up with it are those individuals were covered under a property tax relief proposition, and that case is Proposition 13. Sometimes the people will only begin to try to correct something when it becomes too painful for them to deal with. There's been movies. There was a movie many years ago done by a very, very prominent actor that called The Patriot, where it says, I want to raise my family and live on the land and live peaceably with all men, and I'll have these things, and this is what I've asked God for, and I'll have these things if I can. But, and at the same time, the oppression that involved the war, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and it gets even worse, one of his children lives in the war. Finally, this man rallies to become a ferocious adversary and helps make a difference. The actual story of this patriot was modeled, I was told, after more than two dozen families and the men in the family that historically they're, you know, how Hollywood likes to take a lot of creative license, and sometimes there's less than 3 or 5% reality, and the remainder's creative license. Well, in this one, they made, I was told that there was an excess of 20 to 25% reality, and that the remainder was creative license and fill in. But the thing was that some of those stories were very, very real. And if you go look back into Europe, etc., and the different uprisings that occurred, when the yoke of tyranny became so great that they could no longer tolerate, they began to throw off that yoke. And in the Declaration of Independence says, and that whatever form of government becomes destructive to these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it or to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to they shall seem most likely to affect their safety, happiness, prudence, and indeed will dictate that the government long established should not be changed for light of transient causes, according to all experience has shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms of government for which they are accustomed to. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably that same object, the evidence, a design to reduce them to absolute despotism, it is their right and their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for the future security and security. There, this what I just read to you is part of the founding documents that make up the foundation of these, the aggregate union of the states, the American states of America. There is a government called the United States of America, and there is a government called the United States of America. Oh, the second one is all caps, and it's a corporation. And what happened was that some bankers, in an effort to usurp the authority that they wanted to, these money people, the money lenders, they purchased a lot of extra stock and made great deposits into the banks in the U.S. to the point where the U.S. allowed the prices of the stock to rise, and they became very, very inflated or very expensive, however you want to look at it. And they, some of these money people and money families took individuals, world leaders, including Winston Churchill, aside and explained to them what they were doing and says, look, you're going to see this happen in your lifetime. We're going to bankrupt this country. And here's what we've done. And here's exactly how we're doing it. And here's exactly the date that it's occurring. And you can either, those who are with us, you know, cannot be against us, but those who are not with us are against us. And he says, you have to make your choice. And they told Winston Churchill, you have a choice. And they made it very clear that he would not see the remainder of his term of office if he didn't support their position. But these money people, quite through, you know, it's not like they went out and robbed a liquor store or held up a little old lady on a street corner that was selling newspapers. They did everything legally. They, as scary as it sounds, they the means by which they stepped up was highly legal. What they did was extremely illegal. They set up a different form of government, a corporation, to do business, quote unquote, in 1933 for the aggregate that had been bankrupt. In that case, what happened was that they, and that's where they started to commit illegalities. The organization known as the capital A, lowercase MERICAOF, capital, you know, et cetera, you know, the United States of America there, they, that organization and that government, the last duly elected senator or representative left office in 1937. That was coincidentally the day the last legitimately elected elector left office. And those of you who are might be over the age of 18 but not quite hit 23, and it was murder turned 23. I don't know what I'm going to do when I hit 26. But there's a time when our grandparents, my grandparents, none of you are old enough to know about this, but my grandparents, my great-grandparents, when they went to the vote, to the poll to vote, there were two ballots. There were one. There was one for residents, and they voted for representatives. And there was the other for landowners, and you voted for senators and representatives. And what happened was that they also voted for electors. The electors are the ones, if you remember, the Electoral College is how they actually elect the president. The popular vote does not elect the president. It's technically the property owners are the ones that elect the president originally. Now, there's just one ballot, property owners or residents, alike, all elect electors, and the and it's the elector that casts his vote at Congress when they when the president of the state calls for the vote, that they turn in their votes and they verify and certify who technically is to be the next elected official. Now, one thing that's very scary is that some individuals have alleged that certain races where the challenger did not resign or admit defeat and then subsequently resign, it could go all the way up to the 6th when the, of January, when that session of where the Electoral College is to meet, and you could have somebody that technically did not win the popular vote all of a sudden become president. I had the honor and the privilege of being nominated as an elector for the state that I live in this last Republican state convention, and at the RSC, I thought there was someone more qualified than myself there, and I deferred to that individual, and I asked everyone there to please consider voting for that individual while everybody was called up and given their 6 minutes to respond to their nomination for the position. And it turns out of all the votes that were taken and all the individuals that were elected to certain positions, including party positions, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, at the RSC, that one race was the only one that there was no runoff and was not contested. But the gentleman who was a pastor that I thought had the courage and the temerity of character and the capacity to serve as an elector was honorably elected. He reluctantly accepted the nomination and my deferral to him. And another candidate also did the same thing right after I did. And it was of the eight candidates that were nominated, he won by majority vote the first time, which was the first time in that in the whole 2024 RSC for Texas. Now, they're not elected by just one or the other. Now they're the electors. In these cases, they act upon what the property holders and the residents do. You have a right to own property because it pays all the way up to what, how, and who your elected official is for the front office, who resides in the Oval Office. So owning property can be added to this list of inalienable rights where it says among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And that's the securities rights, governments, and institute of men deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. Along with that other, those other inalienable rights is the right to earn an income. And if you, if we can tax a right to the place where that right is taken away from you, or the proceeds of that right is taken away from you, or your liberty is taken from you because you didn't pay that tax, that they take your liberty and they place you in incarceration, you're you become a guest of Club Fed, then is that right actually a right, or was the tax improperly imposed or misconstrued? Now, the one thing that's very, very important is that as we go back to the Ninth Amendment, the enumeration of Congress of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. And remember, when the Bill of Rights was was ratified and added to the Constitution, the Ninth Amendment was one of the original 10 amendments that were added to the Constitution. It was one of the original 10 amendments. All the rest were were passed and ratified after 1794. But that was and that started with the 11th Amendment. Now, when we come down to the 16th Amendment, it says Congress shall have the power to lay and collect taxes on incomes from whatever source derived without apportionment among the several states without regard to any census or enumeration. People say that just because this is in the Constitution that it is automatically constitutional. However, reading back to the Ninth Amendment, the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others by the people. The right to the government to lay taxes, that's a right established by the 16th Amendment. And to that end, there it cannot be construed to disparage those already possessed by the people. Presently, the when an individual challenges jurisdiction in a court case about whether the IRS has jurisdiction to lay and levy taxes on their income, and we currently have students that are fighting this exact topic in their case in their states. So, one of them is currently fighting both the state and the federal tax. And I am very honored by the temerity of character of this one particular student, this individual. He is standing up for what is correct and right no matter what. And he and his wife, they bless their hearts. It is hard to imagine this much patriotism and this much temerity of character in a single pair of individuals, in a single couple, and that they don't care about the outcome. Of course, then again, you know, they're still human, and like me, I'm human, and two things don't impress me: blood and pain, especially my own. You know, I'm lazy, I'm weak, I don't like pain, you know, and bloodshed, and I don't want to be the point of someone's unkindness or their of their illegal activities. And as many of you probably remember, there's a in Montecito, there was a dissertation by Thomas Jefferson to William Smith, and he in that dissertation of Thomas Jefferson, he said, "The tree of liberty must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants," Thomas Jefferson was making it very clear that freedom was not free, never was. The cost was very, very great. On the back of the $2 bill, the engraving that you look there at, those 56 individuals, the signers of the Declaration of Independence, they every one of those knew that the document that they were signing, they were about to sign, the Declaration of Independence at the Second Continental Congress, was more than probably their death warrant. That they could be charged with treason and hung, drawn, quartered, etc. It was many of them were tortured to death and or lost their lives in a battle for liberty. Most of the signers of the Declaration of Independence, those 56 signers, were very, some of them were very, very wealthy. They gave everything they had. Almost all of them died paupers. They spent everything they have, everything that they could not keep to try to have the one thing that couldn't be taken away from them or that they hoped would not be taken away from them was liberty. And, you know, and the liberty for not just them, but their posterity, the generations that would come behind them. They knew that it was easy for somebody to take a house or a carriage or a horse from them, but if they gave liberty to America and to their descendants and to the posterity, that would be harder to take. And at the same time, Thomas Jefferson makes it very, very clear that that was something that there might have to be installments made on it. And I've asked this question before, and I ask all of you to ponder it in your heart and pose some introspection on your thoughts. Out of all of those men that signed, that those 56 that signed the Declaration of Independence, that knew that they more than likely it would cost, not just cost them financially, but could cost them their lives, and that they could even have their family stripped from them, but they were willing to consider liberty greater than their own life in a roll call vote. How many of those 56, how many of us would be considered, could consider in our hearts to stand up and be called number 57 or number 58? You know, this husband and this wife in this one western state that they're fighting both the federal and the state income tax, I consider them potentially good candidates for nomination for number 57 and number 58. And there's other students that we have that I would consider legitimate nominations. We have some on the East Coast too. we've got some good honorable ones on the East Coast that at some time they realized that there was something wrong with the laying of the tax on income, and they fought it. Somehow, some of them may not have known all the reasons why that was wrong and an error, but they knew it was wrong, and they knew it was wrong in their heart. They couldn't actually put it into words. And sometimes some of your rights, like, and the one of the ones that that is easy to quote and is rapidly changing, and is the individuals, states, et cetera, and individuals individually that are encroaching upon the Second Amendment rights. There's a single sentence that to date has been getting many individuals, many cases of wrongful carry of a firearm or this or that, or some legislators say, well, that's not for hunting. That's, you know, that's a military. Well, wait a minute. The concept of hunting was never brought up when the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment exclusively addresses the bearing arms and a well-regulated militia. It's talking about exclusively military. It doesn't talk about hunting or anything. An individual, an elderly woman, I need to be careful about using that E word, elderly. Like I said, it was murder turned 23. I don't know what I'm going to do when I hit 26. But she begged a question of Ben Benjamin Franklin as he was leaving the Second Continental Congress, and she says, "Good sir, might you tell us what kind of government you have provided us?" And he says, "Dear lady, a republic, if we have the temerity of character to keep it. This is a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And when the people don't have time, aren't capable of, don't have the skill set, don't feel safe, don't have the funds, or just don't want to do something, they hire somebody to do it. They hire help. Sanitation workers, FAA air traffic controllers, U.S. Forestry Service workers, longshoremen, Department of Transportation, maintenance staff, governors, presidents, judges, sheriffs. Oh, by the way, those last four, they're not just hired help. They're temp help. And those inalienable rights that were reserved for the people were never surrendered or abdicated to the hired help. While the sheriff is the highest elected law enforcement official in any jurisdiction, in all the counties in the United States, the thing is that the only reason that he has the right to make arrests is because is that the fact that we the people have conveyed our rights to them to be able to make that arrest. Okay, there's approximately 3,083 sheriffs in the United States. There's a couple of counties that the sheriff is assigned. Right now the LA Sheriff's Office is the largest sheriff's office in the United States, but they're elected, and the right of the individual to make a citizen's arrest still is preeminent and supersedes the right of the highest elected law enforcement official. And the highest law enforcement official in that jurisdiction is an elected position. I had an interesting dubious honor and privilege. And what would you say if you were at a gun show when three federal agents working for the ATF arrested an individual, had him on the ground, and all of a sudden you have plainclothes individuals all of a sudden draw their firearms and place all three of those feds under arrest? Back then, the sheriff was Tommy Thomas here in Harris County, and these gentlemen later identified themselves after they had these gentlemen on the ground. They identified that they were all sheriffs working for Tommy. And they said, "Wait a minute, we're feds. We trump the state." No, you don't. The fed is a subordinate. And they said, you have to check with our sheriff before you make an arrest here. You cannot make an arrest. And, some of the vulgarity and profanity that some of these federal employees had was just, I didn't know they spoke such fluent French. It was just abominable. They had mouths like garbage disposals on them. But one of them, changed his tune and apologized to the individual, and he was actually he was allowed to be released. But this happened after the close of business on Friday, the other two ended up visiting the state criminal court on Monday. And Tommy Thomas was very, very explicit. They weren't getting out until they had, you know, and the federal prosecutor's office sent individuals over to try to, at first, they tried to negotiate, then they tried to pressure. Tommy Thomas made it very clear that they could be included as accessories in a criminal act, the deprivation of rights under color of law. The one question that is thought-provoking that is getting cases dismissed and right and left is, dot, 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 Your Honor, where in the Constitution does it suit my right to keep bear a firearm in that school ground or that place, let alone your courtroom? That's the question. And if any of you would like a business size card that has that on that, you can reach out to Mr. Michael Edwards, and you could send Mr. Michael Edwards your information. If you send Mr. Michael Edwards a self-addressed stamped envelope and request a business card or if you of that, I will try to see that Michael Edwards gets a box or gets a package of these plastic coated business cards. Actually, they're white plastic that you can keep in your wallet. I used to, dating back to 1992, I used to print them all on paper, and I handed them out, and I handed boxes of them out at the Republican state conventions, etc. And I had, I had legislators at the convention take whole boxes of them. Sometimes 250 or 500 at a click would take. One time I had the lieutenant governor take three boxes of 500 from me. My son was 4 years old, he at the time, and a sheriff asked me for some cards, and I said I was out. We were in the rules committee, and I asked my son if he could go get a box of cards for this sheriff, so I could give him some. He took the whole box, but John Arthur came back with five boxes. Well, the lieutenant governor took three boxes, and the sheriff took the other box. And I said, what are you going to do with them? So I'm handing them out to my deputies. And the lieutenant governor says, I'm passing these out in the state legislature. And most of you know that Texas right now, ATF doesn't make – it's very rare that they make an arrest, and they're very careful about what and how they do it. And they, with great discretion, they don't come in and just make an arrest anymore. They're very, very careful about, because that right to keep and bear a firearm cannot and shall not be infringed upon. The with that same consideration at Americans Restoring America, it's our desire to help you understand about your rights, as in property values and property taxes, your rights as in keeping and bearing arms, or your rights as in against income tax. That if we can help you be educated and nurse it and boil it down to a single question or two in court or a short explanation, so that you will cause not just the prosecutor, but the judge to realize that, hey, this is way wrong. We should not be doing this. Their rights are their rights. And wait a minute. My rights are their rights also. Hey, wait a minute. I'm a judge. I don't want to have to pay taxes. Why should – and they all of a sudden, if you can do this properly so that you can educate an individual, whether it's a friend, a federal prosecutor, or even the judge, let alone the jury, that if you get charged with a crime like this, that there's an old saying, it's something about you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. The presently, in Texas, there is no income tax, and that was that issue was raised at the RSC this year, the state convention, and it was pointed out that that was a defamation of an individual's rights, and they added that as a plank to the party platform by with which all of the quote-unquote party elected officials are required to adhere to when voting in the state legislature, that they're required to adhere to that platform. And there were changes made to that platform that they handed all of us delegates out a copy of that in advance, and we were allowed to read and go over it, et cetera, and make notes on things that need to be corrected. And they had, and as the different, in the different caucuses and the different meetings, individuals just like you and I were allowed to stand up to the microphone with all of that, of this particular state's individuals, many of the legislators, et cetera, both state senators and state representatives, not U.S. senators or U.S. senators or representatives, but state. And in this case here, the guidelines that every one of our elected officials, including the judiciary, are required to follow, excuse me, my humble apologies, those changes were heard at the individual basis, and among those was the issue about a state income tax, and that that was struck down, and the issues regarding property tax. As many of you know, that the property tax is one of the remaining taxes that's here in Texas that they can charge sales tax on items, but it is to date, even in California, if you go to buy a half gallon of milk or some eggs, they don't charge you sales tax on it. Does anybody know why? Because that's a staple, by a grocery staple that you need to survive, to live. But they can, and they still charge you tax on coffee, because that's optional, and that's not required for you to survive. But there are certain items in your grocery cart that, and your grocery sack, that they do not charge tax on, because it's a necessity for you to survive. Your income is something that's a necessity for you to survive in. After, when the next special and general election comes up and we come into the election year, please, please, please go to your precinct caucus after the at the end of the election, usually when the polls close at 7:01 p.m., the election judge, the presiding judge and the alternate judges are usually taking care of all of their duties at finishing closing up the poll. But they also have, like in this state, the precinct caucus occurs right after that, and they elect precinct chairman, et cetera, et cetera. And they also designate the local caucus and the local precinct meetings by where with which they establish delegates to the state conventions. Go to those, regardless of what party you're in. Let your voice be heard. May you go and attend the state convention, regardless of who you vote for. And right now, please consider my plea not a partisan or a bipartisan, but a nonpartisan plea for you as an individual to participate, to not just have your voice heard, but your fellow person's voice heard at not just at that precinct or caucus, not just at the voting booth, and not just at the state conventions, but at the national and all the way up to the president, okay? And it's very, very important that to help, while we can fight some of these issues in the judiciary and at Americans Restoring America, we've got certain individuals that are fighting the some of these in court, and there's an old saying, an ounce of prevention is better than a pound of cure. If we begin to change the way we vote and we think, starting at the precinct meetings, the precinct caucuses, and the state conventions, that we start our legislators and we seed the correct thoughts with our legislators so that we don't end up with these tyrannical, empirical laws that take away our rights, then we've stepped to a new level of watching out for not just our well-being, but our fellow person's well-being. And with that, I've overstepped my time. We're going to now turn it over to questions and open it up for question and answer. If you can keep your Q&A to the subject matter topic, that's always appreciated and very helpful and helps promote the subject matter topic of that evening. However, if you have a question that does not adhere to the subject matter topic, you are free to ask that. It is our honor and privilege to do what we can to serve you. With that, back to you, Martin, and back to you, Michael.
All right. Thank you so very much, Brother John. Good news. I did find that article that I was looking for. I will be forwarding it to you in a few minutes after the call tonight, where it shows and it says explicitly, there is no new taxation that was created with the 16th Amendment. How about that? So we're still back to apportioned and unapportioned. So press star 2 on your keypad, ladies and gentlemen, to raise your hand. Press star 2 on your keypad to raise your hand. Those of you listening on Freedoms Radio, you'll see to the center right of your monitor a rectangle the box that's laying on its side. Left-click into it. Type in your comment or your question. Underneath that rectangle box laying on its side, you'll see a place to put your name and some other information, and click Submit. When you hit Submit, it pops up on my end, and I'll be happy to lend my voice to your comment or question. Again, press star 2. John, we do have a good crowd tonight. I did send out some texts earlier to remind people, so I'm just hoping that they'll also raise their hands as well and engage in questions. While we're waiting for that to populate, I'm going to check real quickly at Freedoms Radio, see if anybody has written in. Stand by.
Theoretically, if we do a good job of covering the subject matter topic, hopefully we answer a lot of the questions in advance. However, that can never preclude a lot of the individual circumstances where they have things that may relate to their personal that we also are happy to entertain.
All right. Again, press star 2 on your keypad. If there's no questions asked, then we're going to call it an early night, and I'll have to explain to John why we don't have people asking questions.
Remember, if any of you would like to get a something that's about the size of a credit card, about the same consistency of a credit card, there was somebody at this latest state convention that stood up and he pointed out that he had this little business card sized thing that had ... Your Honor, where in the Constitution does it exclude my right to keep, bear, or firearm in that place, let alone your courtroom? And that he had pointed out that twice in Colorado he had been stopped, arrested, and gone to he'd been stopped five other times, and he showed it to the officer. And he showed it to every single time, but five times where he had a firearm in the vehicle, four times he was actually wearing it, and the officer just looked at it, laughed, says, can I have one of those, and waved him off. But because this thing, he showed it to me, it had not been a little bit war-torn, but not just been laminated once, but it had been re-laminated twice. And I quit making those on cardstock. I still have a few of the cardstock ones left, but if you would like to have, I'm making them all out of plastic now. So that they're durable, so that they can stand the test of time in your wallet, so that if you or someone else you ever send a self-addressed stamp envelope to Michael, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to see that, and if you say I'd like 3 to pass out to my friends, or I'd like 5 or 10 for my friends, you know, or 20, you know, now if you ask for a box of them, you know, and you're, I'll assume in advance, I'm not going to second judge anybody's request, but I'll assume that you're planning on handing out a few of them and making a difference in your community, wherever, whatever state you're in. And if you also want to send with that self-addressed stamp envelope a donation to help cover the cost of printing these, great. If you only send a self-addressed stamp envelope folded up inside of another envelope to Michael, we'll still send you a card. No donations required. It just hit me that it does cost me a little bit. My latest printing bill was just under $1,000 for the batch that I was getting printed. But if you're able to contribute to the cause, praise be the Most High King. Back to you, Michael.
All right, thank you. We don't have anyone that has raised their hands, but we've not also had anybody that left the call. So I want to take an opportunity just to read a small portion of the first page of what I'm going to share with you, John. And I think that you need to listen very carefully. You know, the people often accuse attorneys of being wordsmiths. Well, you should try the people that write legislation. They are the wordsmiths. So 16th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution reads, quote, the Congress shall have power to lay and collect taxes on incomes from whatever source derived without apportionment among the several states. Again, without apportionment among the several states and without regard to any census or enumeration. The 16th Amendment does not say without apportionment. The 16th Amendment does not say without apportionment. The apportionment that was eliminated was, quote, the apportionment among the several states. Up until the alleged passages of the 16th Amendment, and I say alleged because, well, it's been rumored that and proven on a couple occasions that the 16th Amendment was never properly ratified. Not that that matters, right? So up until the alleged 16th Amendment, the Congress could only levy a direct apportion tax on, quote, the several states, end quote. And those states were the source of income. And the proof of that is in the Pollock decision of 1894, the Bruchshaver decision of 1916, and the Stewart decision of 1937, when all those courts ruled that all direct taxes must be apportioned. The rule of apportionment was never abandoned in any of those cases, but was most vociferously reaffirmed in the Stewart case in 1937, 24 years after the alleged passage of the 16th Amendment. Bruchshaver and Stewart corrected some assumptions that came out of the Hilton case, and those can be seen in this following ruling. Quote, indeed, from another point of view, the amendment demonstrates that no such purpose was intended, and on to the contrary, shows that it is drawn with the object of maintaining the limitations of the Constitution and harmonizing their operation. We say this because it is to be observed that although from the date of the Hilton case, because of statements made in the opinions in that case, it had come to be accepted that direct taxes in the constitutional sense were confirmed to taxes levied directly on real estate because of its ownership. The amendment contains nothing repudiation or challenging that ruling in the Pollock case that the word direct had a broader significance since it embraced also taxes levied directly on personal property because of its ownership. And therefore, the amendment at least implied makes such a wider significance a part of the Constitution. And that's Brueschaber versus Union Pacific, 240 U.S. 119. It's a 1916 case. And there's other quotes to follow after that. I'll be sending this to you right after the call tonight, John, both as an attachment in Word doc and plus in the email. I just wanted everyone to understand that when you follow the rule of law, in fact, your remedy is in the law, where'd I hear that from, .com, your remedies in the law.com, that you have your remedies. And I want to share with you that the greatest disappointment that I have, and I've been doing this almost 30 years, are the students that give up, are the students that allow family to weaken them. And what I'm saying basically is I don't know of any situation where it's been different. It's always the wife that goes and nags after the husband to give up and to just accept your punishment for not paying taxes or something, or whatever the reason is for reaching out to us. And the husband not being supported by his wife eventually wears down and sometimes quits. And that's the worst thing. It's the worst thing that I observe. So you have to stay strong. And if you stay strong and you run the course, Brother John will tell you right now, John, have you lost anybody in 40 years that stood? Now, here's the stipulation, that stood the course. And the answer is going to be no.
No, he's not. No.
So this is the point. They want to wear you down. They're going to use every trick in the book. And remember, too, the adversary is on their side. And you know who I mean by the adversary, the third of the heavens that fell to the earth. That adversary is using these people, whether they realize it or not. Even these good Christian men that are attorneys that are coming after you, they use them. You have to stay strong. You know, trust in Yahuwah, not in man, and work with it. So I just wanted to share that with you, John, maybe this will help you in some of the work that you're doing. Anything else, John? Otherwise, let me check Freedoms Radio while you're closing out with your final thoughts and comments.
Well, once again, it's truly an honor and a privilege to stand and serve beside you to help restore Lady Liberty and freedom to America. And I consider it an honor and a privilege to serve beside men and women that openly are willing to be counted as number 57 if there was another roll call vote. And to that end, thank you. And if, like I said earlier about the little card for the Second Amendment, and if it so pleases you, ask, you can contact Michael, and any one of these cases, these court cases that we refer to, we'll be happy to send you links to any of the supporting information so that we can give you the tools for your toolbox to help fight this battle. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Join us tomorrow night, ladies and gentlemen. This will be a recording tomorrow night with Mr. Slevin. He'll be sharing with you the absolute brilliance and beauty of a limited liability company, the way it is wrought, assembled together in such a way that under the law there is no requirement to keep records or to file an income tax with a limited liability company, this commercial entity. and we support that by further encouraging you to not be the manager of the LLC, but to be the trustee to two charitable religious trusts that would be the managers of the LLC. And doing that in such a way, you've double bonded your protection. So until then, good night, everyone, and be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you.